everybody, Stephen Cloud here, back for another episode. If you can, donate to me on patreon.com/thepeaceandlibertypodcast. That's patreon.com/thepeaceandlibertypodcast. Any voluntary donations are going to help me at this point. But today I'm talking to Eric Mulder. He's running for the sheriff of Arapahoe County in Colorado, where I live. A little about Eric. He was in the Army from 2010 to 2016. Since 2017, he has been a part of the Aurora Veterans Affairs Commission. You can find him at mulderforsheriff.com. That's M-U-L-D-E-R for sheriff.com. And you can find him at facebook.com/mulderforsheriff. So tell us a little about yourself, Eric. It's good to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. Big thing is, like you said, I'm running for sheriff of Arapahoe County. Right now I'm running because the incumbent and the previous Democratic challenger, they both ran against each other in 2014, and it's kind of looking like a repeat of the same. So I figured, let's bring the libertarian option into the fold, and let's bring the libertarian perspective to this race. And so far, it's been received overwhelmingly, tremendously well.
That's awesome. Now tell me a little bit about your background, how you evolved politically. Were you always libertarian? And how long have you been a police officer?
Well, I started my libertarian involvement right around 2016, just about after I got out of the military. I started getting involved with the Gary Johnson campaign. That's where it first got kicked off for me. Then I started getting more involved with the Libertarian Party of Colorado. Started with getting involved on their convention planning committee, and I've been doing the graphics for the Libertarian Party of Colorado's convention since 2017. Okay. And right now I'm the county chair of the Libertarian Party of Arapahoe County, where we've got over 4,000 libertarians who are registered with the party.
No, I'm in Denver myself, so you're actually pretty close to me. I always say that Denver is such a progressive city. People ask me, like, why do you live here? I'm just like, I guess aside from the people, I really love it.
Absolutely. Denver's a very progressive city. But what I'm finding is that you can find common ground with all sorts of people. I've spoken to Denver Democrats, Denver Republicans, Denver Independents, and they've all said, we wish we could have an elected sheriff like in Arapahoe County, because the issues we're facing in our jail, we believe, could be very easily solved if we had a more direct say over who our sheriff was.
Well, that sounds awesome. Again, really glad to have you on. We're going to have a great discussion here. I guess to start, police have a bad rep, especially among libertarians. It seems like almost every day you turn on the news and there's another person that I was watching this video the other day. This group of guys, they were approached by a few police officers, and I guess they had some open containers. One of the guys decided to run, and you see the video of the dash cam or the body cam of the guy chasing the guy, and he shoots the guy in the back. It was totally, I mean, just point is, you see stuff like this every single day, so police abuse seems to be real. But what is your perspective on all this? I'm sure you've seen a lot in your time.
I would say from my perspective, I approach it from what my time in the military was like. In the Army, we were given extensive training and extensive coverage on the rules of engagement, when to escalate violence, when to de-escalate violence, when to respond with deadly force, when not to respond with deadly force. And in a lot of situations like that, I think it just comes down to, what's the rules of engagement for this situation, and how can we handle them in the most peaceful way possible?
Definitely agree. Looking at your website, you have 3 points listed as part of your platform, and they read as decriminalize, demilitarize, and due process. Now, I must say, if that was a libertarian pickup line, that would definitely land the date with me. But I guess we'll go through each of those points. So let's start off by talking about decriminalize. Now, the war on drugs has been ongoing since the 70s. According to the Drug Policy Alliance, we spend about $51 billion a year in the war on drugs, and we've easily spent over $1 trillion over the past 50 years on this. What's your view on all this?
Absolutely, I agree. The war on drugs has become a serious cost endeavor, and I would consider it probably one of the greatest failures of the federal government. And what states and various counties are finding all across the country is that when it comes to the opioid crisis that we're currently dealing with, treating it as a public health concern and as a treatment concern yields far better results than trying to treat it as another criminal justice concern. Instead of incarcerating more people, they're finding infinitely more success with treatment. And if you want a local example close to home in Colorado, a good example to look at is Sheriff Bill Masters out in San Miguel County. He himself has written an entire book about the war on drugs and how, from his perspective as a law enforcement officer and as a sheriff, that it hasn't been very effective and that pursuing alternatives is far superior.
Now, how long have you been a police officer for?
I myself have never been in law enforcement, but I've been relying on my military experience. So what I found is that a lot of people are quite okay with that because as a member of the military, I know what it's like to put on a set of body armor, train with a weapon, go into an uncertain situation and try to make a positive difference. And from my experience in the military as a chaplain assistant, I'm familiar with a lot of the struggles that deputies have to deal with at home, such as PTSD, sleep deprivation, and other issues relating to that. So what
maybe,
I found,
I'm just a little confused. So you're running for sheriff. How does that work? If you became sheriff, would you be part of the local law enforcement? How would that work?
Absolutely. In the Colorado Revised Statutes, one of the requirements is that a sheriff has to obtain the post-certification, peace officer training and selection. I got those letters mixed up there. And what I've done in my own research is I found that the Community College of Arapahoe County offers post-certification because the Sheriff's Department itself doesn't have their own training academy. And through this certification through the Community College, they also have a weekend program. So being elected as sheriff, I've got to be hitting the books on the weekends and hitting the office during the weekday. So I'm
I completely misunderstood. I thought you had been a police officer for a while. So you literally just got up one day and just thought, hey, I'm gonna go run for sheriff.
Absolutely. I've of the mindset, hey, it's like what Wayne Gretzky said, you miss every shot you don't take. So I figured this is the chance to finally start talking about the issues. And since I don't have experience in law enforcement, my campaign has been nothing but talking about the issues and finding better solutions to them.
So that's awesome, man. I'm really glad to hear that. Well, your next point is demilitarize. So you mentioned the federal government's 1033 program. I'd like you to talk about that because I have no idea what that is. But this all relates to the fact that, you know, we're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. So maybe talk about the legislation, what you've seen, maybe some of the abuses of power you've seen.
Absolutely. With the 1033 program, even the Pauls, Rod and Rand, they've both come out vehemently against the program because it has basically saddled old, obsolete military hardware onto local law enforcement agencies, many of whom who've never used items like this before in the past. Take, for example, the MRAP tactical vehicle. It's a vehicle that was used by the military and still used by the military for engaging in operations during the war on terrorism. And what that vehicle is built for is it's built as a improvised explosive device resistant vehicle, which in Arapahoe County we have seldom had problems with IEDs. So from a policing perspective, the vehicle itself isn't entirely appropriate for meeting the needs of policing. And what also doesn't get mentioned is that even though the federal government will give these older vehicles to local law enforcement agencies as a quote-unquote gift, the main problem just comes with the upkeep and maintenance of these vehicles, because from my perspective in the military, these vehicles are extremely costly to maintain and upkeep, and units themselves seldom have their own. It's often vehicles we have to borrow from the unit who was in the theater of operations before us. And these vehicles are actually highly prone to rollovers, and in a place like Colorado, that's not something you need your emergency response vehicle to do.
That sounds insane. So, I mean, what possible use could they have for these? I mean, you'd have to be taken down. I don't even know what you'd use that for.
Honestly, some departments try to tout them as emergency response vehicles, which I've stated from my own experience in the military working with these vehicles up close, they're highly prone to rollovers. They're very top heavy. They have an extremely high clearance. So there's a lot of underpasses you're probably not even going to get these vehicles through. Some of them try to use them as sort of a vehicle's presence. They're trying to use the presence of the vehicle to deter certain actions, which in Arapahoe County, we've seldom, if ever, had a need to do so.
Yeah, that leaves me speechless because obviously, well, I guess back to what we're saying, the government doesn't really have an incentive to spend wisely. So you're talking about these things are really, really expensive. In a free market, they would probably have to go with what makes sense, not just they have this unlimited budget and they can just spend whatever they want.
Absolutely. And it goes back to even with military contracts working in the Department of Defense, there's often a sole solitary contractor who's able to provide the supports and the parts for these vehicles, not just with MRAPs, but also with helicopters and other vehicles. So you have singular contractors who often have no bid contracts who are able to manufacture these devices. And so when a vehicle breaks down, the military isn't able to turn to third-party supporters the way they could in an actual free market to try to find the most competitively priced product. They've got to go with what they've been contracted to purchase from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your last part of your platform is called is due process. Or oh, excuse me, I think I mixed those two parts up. The demilitarizer, and we're talking about the 1033 program. Your last point was due process, so we're talking about innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. So what is your view on that?
Absolutely. Due process is predominantly relating to a couple of key issues, the biggest one being civil asset forfeiture, the big subject that's a really large sore point in the law enforcement community, believe it or not, because you have the Police Chiefs Association and the National Sheriff's Association disagreeing on what the extent of civil asset forfeiture should be. One group is saying, let's use more of it. One group is saying, let's use a lot less of it. And what we're finding is that civil asset forfeiture, it incentivizes police departments to seize cash and other assets from people. Being from Denver, you saw recently the Tesla vehicle that the Denver Police Department has seized.
And I did not hear about that. Tell me about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the Denver Police Department has recently seized a Tesla vehicle that they're currently touting as a community outreach device. And the problem they're running into with that is that they don't give a lot of details on what crime this vehicle was even used for or even in. And the biggest difference between criminal asset forfeiture and civil asset forfeiture is with criminal asset forfeiture, the police are only allowed to seize assets that have been directly used in the crime that the person is being charged with. So if the person happens to own a Tesla, but they never use the Tesla in the crime, that can't be seized under criminal asset forfeiture. Whereas civil asset forfeiture, it's all based upon suspicion and quote unquote probable cause. And now some departments are going to say we have strict internal policies. But the issue with that is that the public is often very unaware of these internal policies. They're not subject to public scrutiny. So, of course, they would say that they have strict internal policies because they're the ones who are deciding whether or not to seize an asset. And we've seen serious abuses of these all across the nation and in Colorado, just contributing to this mindset of policing for profit that has seriously hurt public trust between local law enforcement and law enforcement agencies. So as sheriff, my goal is to say, let's switch to a criminal asset forfeiture mindset instead. Let's get away from civil asset forfeiture because you don't need to seize assets from people without due process in order to stop crime.
It's crazy to think that if I'm pulled over and say I have like $1,000 of cash just in plain sight, if I can't provide like a paycheck stub right that second, they can just seize it. And what's really crazy is what you're talking about, that they actually seize stuff and use it for their benefit. That seems creepy at the least.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely seems terrifying. And what's even worse about civil asset forfeiture is that under civil asset forfeiture, you're not entitled to legal counsel, whereas under a criminal trial, you're entitled to a legal representative if you can't afford one. And what people are finding more often than not is in order to pay for the attorney, have the trial, and get their assets back, it oftentimes costs more than what the assets were even worth. And sometimes when they've tried to get their assets back, they've been told the money's already been spent.
Oh man, it reminds me of this this parking ticket I got. I took it to court. I won the court case. When I walked out of court, I had to pay like $60 in court fees, even though my charges were dropped. I mean, it's just all insane.
Absolutely. And that's what the libertarian perspective is so crucial to having in offices like sheriff, because we're of the mindset that policing should not be done for profit. Profits are for the free market and for entrepreneurs, not for government. We shouldn't have government doing this in the least. And as libertarian candidates, we can state taking things from people without due process is not only morally wrong, but it's very unconstitutional. And we can say, let's stop doing this.
Absolutely. Well, we listed your three main points to your platform. What other stuff can we talk about that you're interested in changing?
Honestly, one of the biggest things that I've decided to when running in this race for sheriff is, again, just trying to bring it back to the issues, because often in sheriff's races, we hear about the candidate's family or how long they've lived in the county, how long they've been in the department, which is all nice things, but we seldom get into the roots of the problems that sheriffs have to deal with. So my campaign for sheriff in Arapahoe County, I've been trying to focus squarely upon issues that we're dealing with, not only across Arapahoe County, but in the country as well, and just trying to find solutions to them, because anyone can bring up a problem, but the most important thing is to have a solution prepared as well. And even if your solution isn't right, it's still a solution and it can get people talking.
I like what I'm hearing. I mean, like I said, just to jump back to the beginning here, a lot of people have disdain for the police, and that's that you turn on the TV and you see all this crazy stuff happening. I think libertarians sometimes have the misconception that we're against police. No, in a free market, you'd still have police. Of course you still would. But the way the system is right now, we have hundreds of thousands of laws in the books. There's a good book by Harry Silverglade. It's called Three Felonies a Day. And the point is, no matter what you're doing on a given day, you're most likely engaged in a felony just because of how many laws are on the books. So it's super relieving to hear that you want to roll back a lot of the stuff and just get back to, you know, actually fighting crime instead of, you know, fighting what ends up being citizens at some point. Like, you're seizing cash, you're seizing Teslas. Now, to me, that sounds pretty obvious. They just thought it would be cool to have a Tesla, and they're probably running around with autopilot all day and having parties. I don't know. I mean, what else can you assume? There has been many cases where, you know, people were obviously seizing money during these criminal investigations, and they use it themselves. That's there is a report. Well, the CIA has always trafficked drugs, but if there's still reports to this day of, you know, finding like 30 kilos of cocaine in the nose of planes, and that's all organized. If it's in the nose of a plane, that's organized. So it's just all crazy.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I've been seeing that statistic quite a lot recently, where people try to talk about the criminality of certain individuals. And what I think it's lost on a lot of people is, like you've said, most of us have committed three felonies in a single day without even knowing it. That's why I believe it's important to get libertarians in all aspect of government that we can find, not just in the sheriff's department and in the coroner's office and in the school board, but also in the legislature. Because the libertarian mindset, and the reason I was drawn to the party so much, is the libertarian party is firmly of the mindset that in order for a crime to have been committed, there has to be somebody who has been harmed because of that act, hence the term no victim, no crime. And I believe that's very important to carry as a libertarian and stand up for. Because we're firmly of the mindset that it's all about the individuals, and we stand up for the individual's freedom to live their life in peace and to not be harmed by other people.
Totally agree, 100%. Well, Eric, it's been a pleasure having you on. Like I said, we can find you at MulderForSheriff.com, and you can also find him at Facebook.com/MulderForSheriff. Is there any other thoughts you had before we wrap up, or is there any way we can get out there and support you anyway else?
One of the best ways to support is, just like you said, go on to my Facebook page at MulderForSheriff.com. I'm also on Twitter and on Instagram at MulderForSheriff. And if you go to my website, you can go right to my CrowdPack page and give me a contribution. Anything helps. $10 pays for a month of internet. $100 can get me like 300 palm cards, and $25 can get me 250 business cards. So even if you could give $2, that $2 will help.
And we libertarians argue for voluntary contributions. That's how the world should work.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Steven. It was a pleasure getting to talk to you.
Absolutely. Let's do this again after. What is the actual race?
The actual election is going to be on November 6, 2018, same with the rest of the congressional races.
Well, how about this? We'll have you back on after that. You know, whether you win or lose, I just want to hear how it went. And let's do this again soon.
I would be honored to. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Absolutely.